This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ryan Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us live in studio. And welcome back.
Good to be here.
Now, months ago, we sort of asked you to just come in periodically as you were running for re-election to the Albemarle County School Board. And we want to congratulate you on your victorious achievement of re-election. You bested your opponent, Patrick Wood, last Tuesday, and we congratulate you for that. And but even better than that is you're back now on the show, on this little show, Tuesday afternoons at 5 o'clock to talk about growth and development and help to educate us about what's going on in our community.
Well, it's good to be back, and I appreciate the people of Albemarle County for having me back in my role on the school board as well, and really appreciate their support and coming out and voting.
You were at home Tuesday night with the family?
I was. You know, running a nonpartisan campaign, you have to throw your own party. There was like seven of us in my kitchen, and we were listening to you, read the results. And of course, WINA had it first, and
we
were taking notes, and I was thinking to myself, why didn't I do an Excel spreadsheet for this? And I was writing them all down and trying to add them up in the calculator. And I saw a picture of Rob Bell in the Seville today. It looks like he's doing the same thing at Republican headquarters.
Writing down all those numbers.
Trying to add them up.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And why don't we start there? We'll start with the elections last week, because I've been out sick all week and I haven't had a chance to reflect on what happened and explore what happened. And you're the perfect person to do that with, since growth was the issue here in Albemarle County last week.
It certainly was. And I think it played out differently in the Ravana district and the Whitehall district. The Scottsville race, you know, going into that, I think the conventional wisdom was Lindsay Doerier had that one locked up. And that's how it turned out in the end.
Because
of his experience on the board, the fact that he had two independents running against him. And Mr. Doerier is a candidate that both Republicans and Democrats can get behind.
Right, right.
And they did.
And he's been around there forever in Scottsville. Everybody knows him.
Yep.
They knew what they were voting for. And if anybody wasn't voting for him, the two independents split the anti-Doerier vote. But even then, if you add up all the votes they got, it wouldn't have beat him.
That's right. That said, I certainly applaud the independents for running, because they certainly added to the mix of questions.
Absolutely.
And gave Charlottesville Tomorrow a reason to cover that race intently and focus on what each candidate had to say.
I would love to have seen that in the city with the Republican candidate. I think we really missed out on that.
And even the day after the election, Mr. Doerier at the first Board of Supervisors meeting was bringing up things that he heard on the campaign trail. And those are things he might not have heard had he not been challenged and forced to get out there and knock on doors. So, again, I think it's a good thing they ran. It was an uphill battle, just like in the city of Charlottesville, uphill battle for independents to go against the Democrats in the city. But in the county, the other two districts that we focused on, Charlottesville Tomorrow, was the Whitehall supervisor race and the Ravana supervisor race.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and let's take that up after this break.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, getting his thoughts on the elections. And let's look now at the Whitehall District and the Ravana District in Albemarle County, where we saw two very, very interesting things happen politically here.
Yep. Two Republican incumbents running for re-election. Obviously, they're incumbents. And that's David Wyant out in Whitehall, who lost to Democratic challenger Ann Malik. And then Ken Boyd, who is reelected in the Ravana District, defeating Marcia Joseph, who's the chair of the Albemarle County Planning Commission. Two different races. And, you look at what the different parties are saying in the news media and on WINA last week. The Democrats are saying we're getting really organized in the county. And even Jim Camblos, in his concession speech a couple days after the election, tipped his hat to the Democratic Party's ability to get Denise Lunsford elected. There's definitely some truth to that. The Republicans on the other side say it's the national issues hurting them locally. And when Webb won, for the Senate race, they said it was changing demographics in Albemarle County. It's certainly some of all those things has some spillover effect. But really, these two races for me, as you said in the intro, came down to growth and development.
Yeah,
issues.
I agree with you. I think all of those things did. Because let's admit it, there are people that walked into the voting booth last Tuesday and voted for D's because they hate George Bush. It happened. And they don't care what the race was. There are people that did that. But I would agree with you as well. I think most people, when they went into the Whitehall and Ravenna districts, were thinking about growth.
I think that sample ballot factor where you're handed a sample ballot and asked to vote a slate for one part or the other tends to have the greatest impact on the bottom of the ballot. So clerk of the court, school board in particular, where maybe people were not informed about who to vote for. And so they're looking for some guidance and they'll look to whatever party they feel most comfortable with.
Or just not vote.
But I think most people come into the polls on supervisor, you know, ready to vote in that race. And certainly Charlottesville Tomorrow tried to make them ready to vote and informed by sending out our voter guide that covered those races in depth. But, you know, in Crozet and the Whitehall District, the difference was the wounds out there are fresh. When it comes to the master plan, population estimates, there's been a number of issues out there that have that really put Dave Wyant in a bad place when it came to getting reelected. He could talk about his engineering experience, but the people didn't see the infrastructure coming online, despite that experience, in coordination with the new development. In the Ravenna district, the development happened a long time ago. Forest Lakes and Hollymead, people are in those communities and pretty content, you know, with the way things are. There's some concerns around the lake at Forest Lakes and the things they saw happen at Hollymead Town Center, but nothing like what you see out in the Whitehall district. And so there, when you had a race more of equals between a Marsha Joseph and a Ken Boyd, the incumbent is going to, you know, in this case, came out on top, just barely.
Yeah, 146 votes out of almost 5,000.
Right. So credit to Marsha Joseph for making that a competitive race.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think in the end, people felt like Mr. Boyd was representing that district well, was helping them when they had concerns about different issues.
He has a lot of fans there, yeah.
And was seen as somebody, you know, his fiscal and financial experience was, I think, you know, a strong suit and something he brought to the board that a lot of people wanted to see continue. So I do see a real difference there. And Ann Malik, you know, unlike the first time David Wyant was elected when he ran against Eric Strucco, who now lives in Ivy, but at the time lived in Whitehall, Eric Strucco was the candidate who was involved heavily in the master planning process. He was on what's called the DISC committee and helped put the master plan together. David Wyant sort of ran against the master plan and said, I'm going to protect Crozet the way it is. Once he got on the board, he saw, you know, what the master plan was intended to do, and he started voting for the new developments to come along in line with the master plan. And there weren't as many differences then when you went against an opponent like Ann Malik, who's also a farmer, lives in the rural area, and also has lived here her whole life. And so he didn't have that sort of advantage that he had against Eric Strucco. You know, Ken Boyd and Marsha Joseph. Marsha Joseph has voted on a lot of those same projects that Ken Boyd voted
as
on.
Chair of the Planning Commission.
Exactly. Yeah. There are two that were differences, but the rest, they all, you know, you could make the argument they voted the same way. And people certainly did make that argument. So I think there was less to differentiate. But the issues around growth and infrastructure and how we pay for road improvements, and your previous guest talking about that sense in the state of Virginia and what's going on in the General Assembly. How are we going to get the funding to take care of these roads? Increasingly, that's being passed on to local elected officials, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens as this new Board of Supervisors takes over. The 3-3 balance or stalemate, depending on how you look at it, is now broken, and potentially on a lot of issues, there's a 4-2 majority with Ann Malik coming on board.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch how this takes place. And what's the timeline? They're sworn in?
They take office January 1st.
Just a few weeks. Okay. Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us live in studio. Brian, before we wrap up the elections, there's a couple of points we wanted to discuss here, the elections, local elections from last week.
Well, one other interesting thing, I think, was the turnout numbers. And this was the first time that the city of Charlottesville moved their city council election to November. And they had a horrible turnout.
It was
26%.
That's awful. Awful.
So, you know, that's disappointing.
And that has to do a lot with the folks who think, well, the Democrats will win, why go to the polls?
Yeah.
And they did. All three of them won, even though both two independent incumbents were fantastic. I mean, I would have voted for them. Those independent incumbents were, the independent candidates, not the independent incumbents. The two independent candidates, Barbara Haskins and Peter Kleeman, were fantastic candidates for Charlottesville City Council.
And, you know, it does show the power of having the party support in the city of Charlottesville. It's, you know, these were contested races. And again, credit to the independents for running. Charlottesville Tomorrow was glad to cover those races and get that information out in our voter guide for the city council race. But again, I was surprised that a candidate like Peter Kleeman didn't pull in more votes.
Yeah, yeah. So now we're going to watch Charlottesville burn money even faster than...
Now, in the county, though, county voter turnout was 44.5%, which was, you know, better than I
expected. That's pretty good, actually.
And
for an
off-year
election.
Whitehall was 49%.
Wow.
So again, Ravana, I think, was up in the 40s as well. So those two really contested supervisor seats definitely brought out people. But, you know, so did the sheriff's race and the Commonwealth's attorney race.
Yeah, yeah. Charlottesville Tomorrow online at SevilleTomorrow.org. Y'all did a survey a few months ago about growth, the sentiment among voters in the county as far as growth is concerned. And we discussed that in great detail on this program. And if folks want to learn more, they can go to SevilleTomorrow.org. Do you think the results of the election last week sort of bore out the results of your survey?
In a number of areas, I think the election did, and I guess I would point to dissatisfaction with local government that we found when it came to making sure the infrastructure was in place, creating opportunities for public participation. Those are issues really at the heart of some of these big growth and development decisions, what time of day the public hearings are, what information's available about, you know, master plans, things like that. And so, we found that, I'm looking at the numbers here, only 32.8% of the voters we surveyed felt like local government was doing a good job ensuring infrastructure was in place. And so I think some of those candidates sort of ran away from our survey results and looked at it as, you know, it was even called a push poll, and where there were other things that might have fit with their philosophy. So a lot of these candidates have talked about conservation easements as something they support as a tool that's voluntary. People opt into that and sell their building rights or set them aside. And so some of these candidates could have embraced some of those ideas and said, hey, we can do better by the public, and here's what I plan to do, or here's an area where I agree with the public and what they're saying, and here's how I'm going to make that happen. And the other candidates focused, like Ann Malik and Marsha Joseph, focused heavily on infrastructure and rural area protection messages, and that was another part of our survey that came out real strong. As far as the public wanting something done on rural area protection. And I think, we'll see that acted upon pretty quickly by this board. What form it's going to take is anybody's guess. And certainly supervisors like David Slutsky are talking about lots of different ideas. But he has certainly been emboldened by this election. And the day after the election was talking about it in front of his colleagues and saying, hey, we've got a new mandate here. And I saw Dennis Rooker switch his position on a development project related to a church that was in the rural area. But he came out and said, I'm going to support this and here's why. And then in the middle of it said, I've changed my mind. I would now vote against this if we voted. And I think that's one indication where having that support of four people, or even the future, you know, knowing that it's coming in January, can, you know, give people a backbone to do things they believe in.
Help us understand what exactly the mandate is. It's not no growth, right? I mean, nobody ran on I want to stop all the growth. What exactly is the mandate? And I guess we're only going to see it when they start voting. But what do you think people were voting for?
Well, you know,
sort of a more sensible growth. Like, let's just not, I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but.
Well, you know, 95% of the voters we surveyed said they want to protect the rural countryside. The devil's in the details. What is the best approach for doing that? So every candidate can run and say, I want to protect the rural countryside. And they all did. It's going to come down to what are the best approaches. And candidates like Ken Boyd said, I'm going to be the best person to protect your property rights and your pocketbook. And so that property rights theme is very important in these elections.
That resonated with a lot of voters.
It did. But out in Crozet, in the Whitehall district, the taxing and the property rights issues were trumped by, we want better management of growth and development. We think too much has been approved, and you can't even tell us how many people are going to live in Crozet. So, you know, why should we believe you when you say you're going to manage this well? So I think with that sentiment, it didn't play well out there. You know, people believe, generally, I think, in this community believe in the strategy that Albemarle County has, and we're ahead of many other localities in Virginia as far as having a designated growth area where that growth is trying to be channeled. I think some of the questions that have come up is are we approving too much? Not should there be a development of Biscuit Run that's in the growth area. So we know as a community that the line's already been drawn around Biscuit Run. Someday there'll be a development there. But I think one question that has not been asked as much by this current board is the timing right? And I think that's another sentiment you hear from the community. Yes, when we have growth, it should be there, but let's only have it when we really need it. Let's not approve things and then have the zoning be stale. Let's not approve things and have the proffers be worth much less 20 years from now when they actually get called upon and the cash comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Because the developers sort of come forward and get approval on things with no intention to immediately do it. There's no building permits.
Sure.
They're just sort of getting it and it's lined up and they could do it 20 years from now.
You know, Exhibit A, Albemarle Place. It's been approved. Nothing's happening. North Point.
I don't think anything's going to happen.
Not happening at North Point right now. Who knows when Biscuit Run's going to start. Now, Hunter Craig definitely believes, you know, Biscuit Run is going to be an exception and be developed quickly and thinks the demand is there. And he's telling the realtors to get ready to sell all those homes. So there is some enthusiasm. There's some belief by these developers that Charlottesville is a different market from the rest of the country, and that because of the quality of life here and attractiveness of being here in UVA and all the things that we love about Charlottesville, that people will keep moving here and needing homes.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You went to a meeting this morning, was it public? That's the question. You almost got thrown out.
It was not a public meeting. I sort of invited myself to this meeting.
Well, good for you.
To put a little sunshine on a project called the Hillsdale Drive Extended.
See, I don't like these people who are connected with government, and they're doing public service projects. They're doing government work, and they think they can close the door on the public. It's like, no.
Well, if people don't ask to go, they just keep doing what they've been doing. And apparently, for 4 years, no member of the public has ever come to one of these meetings. Now, I mean, the Hillsdale Drive project's been moving along, so it's not that there's a big concern that I was out looking for. I just wanted to go and see what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And some interesting news today.
Yeah, you broke some big news that we're going to share with folks now. Very interesting stuff. Remind us, who is this group and what is Hillsdale Drive?
So Hillsdale Drive has a steering committee that was appointed by Charlottesville's Neighborhood Development Services. Hillsdale Drive is actually in the county and the city, but more of it is in the city. And it will go from the senior center. You know, the Hillsdale Drive is behind the Sam's Club, and then it sort of runs in, not Sam's Club.
It's not Sam's Club.
Toys R Us is what I meant to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Toys R Us. And it runs into the senior center.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of a little jog in the road, and then it continues past the senior center to the Pepsi plant,
right,
which is back there behind the post office.
Yeah.
So Hillsdale Drive would be extended through the Seminole Shopping Center, actually through some of those buildings too, and then through the middle, what is now mostly parking. But imagine that road running through the middle of Seminole Shopping Center.
So you'll be able to get in your car and let's say you're on hydraulic hydraulic. You'll be able to get on a road there and go through what's now where the Terrace Triple Theater used to be
that
they tore down.
You know where that little car wash is on hydraulic?
Yeah.
So think about starting right there.
Yeah.
And you could drive all the way from there to the Toys R Us without getting on 29 North.
You could drive all the way up to Rio Road.
You could drive all the way to Rio.
Without ever getting on 29.
Or to the neighborhoods like Raintree, Fieldbrook, Carsbrook, those things.
It runs parallel to 29.
That's right.
Right in front of the Giant.
So this is one of those parallel road projects that the community has been saying we really, really need to fix 29 North.
Yeah.
And so the update is they've come to an agreement with Chuck Rotkin, who runs Great Eastern Management, owns the Seminole Shopping Center. He's agreed to have the road go through sort of the north wing of his shopping center. There's that little – it's, you know, Seminole is like a L-shaped thing. You got the giant – food store,
yeah.
And then the north wing sort of juts out
where the pet
towards
store
29.
Is. Yeah.
Right. Go right through the pet store, I think. Give or take.
Really?
Right around there.
So the road is not going between where the road is now.
No, it's going to go through the building.
It's going to go right through where the...
Yeah, but that's old news. It's always been...
I didn't know that.
It's always going to do that. So
or pet store. My kids love that pet
where
store.
Where it will start is at Greenbrier Drive, right in front of the senior center. There'll be a new traffic light at Greenbrier Drive in Hillsdale. It'll then go up that road past the senior center. And then it has to thread the needle through the Pepsi plant and the U.S. Post Office before it gets to the shopping center. And this is apparently a bone of contention with the U.S. Postal Service. They are not too happy about having this road and sidewalk and pedestrians right up on their back door. Although I went up there and was taking pictures this morning and nobody seemed to be worried about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so there's some negotiation going on between the city, Pepsi, and the U.S. Postal Service. Hopefully that'll be resolved by the end of the year. They get the road through there. They may not be able to have a sidewalk back there. They may just have a multi-use path because they may not have enough room between these two buildings. If you look on our website, SeavilleTomorrow.org, go to the blog, you can see a picture of where this post office and the Pepsi plant is. And there's just a little grove of trees there.
Yeah.
That'll be gone because the road will be there. So then you run into the north wing of Seminole Shopping Center. Then you get into the parking lot and you'll hit a traffic light at Seminole Court. Seminole Court is the Sperry intersection. So Sperry Marine out on 29,
oh, yeah.
That's Seminole Court. That road comes into the shopping center.
Yeah.
There'll be a new traffic
light. That's actually
light.
A very dangerous intersection now because people fly down that road if you're trying to get... You know where I'm talking about? It's sort of right there.
Yeah, we'll wait till Albemarle Place comes in on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
But we get ahead of ourselves. And then you'll drive along, and then you're going to hit a roundabout in the middle of the shopping center. There'll be one roundabout on Zan Road, and then you're going to cut over towards the Cinema 4. And that's what we learned today, that now the alignment is going through yet another theater. So the Terrace Triple, I think is what it was called,
yeah,
has already been torn down. But now the Regal Cinema 4 is in the way of this new road alignment.
So they're talking about tearing down, news you're breaking today, they're talking about tearing down the Seminole 4 behind Kmart.
That's right.
One of the very few movie theaters we have here.
I mean, I don't think they can cut it in half.
that's a bummer. I mean, it's a, you know, frankly, a nasty, smelly old theater, but it's one of the only ones we got.
But yeah, and Albemarle Place was supposed to have new theaters too, so maybe, you know, that'll be an offset in the future. But yeah, that's the news. The alignment's been moved a little bit. They need to work with the post office to figure out...
When's all this happen?
They will bring to public hearing in early 2008 the final plan for Hillsdale Drive. Should be finished around 2010.
Goodness gracious. Brian Wheeler, you can learn more online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. Thank you, Brian.
Good to be back, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.